Welcome to the Messianic Message. I'm Kimberly Rogers Brown.
All right, we're going to keep that map up there.
Map's not updated yet.
Okay, I'll wait till you get it up there.
I like that.
Map's updated.
Okay, we're going to keep that map up there. For the whole teaching, I've got two more maps that I will show you. Before I do the teaching, I want to pray. Yahweh Elohim, Yeshua, I thank you and praise you that you show us here step by step what's coming, and we're learning more and more of what the truth is about your coming. And I pray that all of what is taught today would be only your words and not of me. And if I have words of my own in here, that those would die and die away, but only yours would go forth and come back bearing fruit. I pray this in Yeshua's holy and precious name. Amen. So we're going to continue looking at the wilderness. The last 2 weeks we've looked at the wilderness, where it is, who's going to be there for the last 2 weeks. But this time we're going to look at Yeshua's return wilderness route, which will match the same route as in the first Exodus. And I'll just give you a heads up. This teaching will be somewhere between 40 and 45 minutes. And it's an in-depth look at the ingathering. Okay, so the reason that this came to my mind was when I was studying this week's Torah portion, Deuteronomy 3, the first thing that popped out of my mind was Bashan. Bashan is one of the places where Yahweh said his people will be brought back from, which tells us that it will be a safe place. You know, he's going to keep them safe and he'll bring them back from there. And I'm going to show you the scriptural evidence for this. Psalm 68:22, the Lord said, I will bring you again from Bashan. I will bring you again from the depths of the sea. Well, Bashan is not on Yeshua's return route. That's because what used to be ancient Bashan is now inside the border of modern Syria. The king of the north has Syria as part of that king of the north coalition now. And they will attack Jordan and sweep south to Amman. And then they will stop. They will not proceed further south from Amman into Moab and Edom, because these, Daniel 11:41 says, they will escape from his hand, the king of the north's hand. So Moab and Edom are safe places, as we understand. So Bashan will actually be in enemy territory when all this happens. However, those who will be in Bashan will be brought back from there to Jerusalem after Yeshua's army successfully reconquers Israel and Jerusalem from the UN and the Iran armies at Armageddon. And Bashan will once again become part of Abraham's Israel territory. So Psalm 68 is a future tense situation that refers to the ingathering at the end of days after Yahweh has scattered his people. But again, where will Yeshua bring them to? Well, as I said, to Jerusalem. He will gather them from there, but not in the original return route. It may be that his people who are in Bashan will come to Jerusalem on their own, since Bashan is not in Yeshua's return route. And Isaiah does give us a sense of when the gathering of the people who are outside of the wilderness of the people, where those people will be. Isaiah gives us a sense of when the gathering of those people will be after Yeshua arrives. If we go to Isaiah 60 verse 1, it says, arise, shine, for your light is come, and the glory of Yahweh is risen upon you. So this verse does not specify who Yahweh is speaking to. But as we proceed, we will see that he is addressing Zion. And what is Zion? Well, It is both Jerusalem and the Temple Mount and the people, but specifically here in this passage, Jerusalem and the people. Your light refers to Jerusalem. Your light, Zion, Jerusalem, and the people has come. So arise, shine, for your light has come. Yeshua is the light, and he is the glory of Yahweh. Yahweh being him and his Father together. Yeshua will rise. Yahweh is risen. That word there is Zarak. It's Strong's H2224, and it means literally to irradiate or shoot forth beams. That is to rise as the sun and specifically to appear. So when he says, arise, shine, for your light has come and the glory of the Lord has appeared upon you. So upon you, where does Yeshua appear first? To his people, Zion. Then he will appear in Jerusalem. And so that's Zion. He will appear in Jerusalem, in Zion, after taking the route that you see on your screen. Isaiah 60, verse 2. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But Yahweh shall appear upon you, and his glory shall be seen upon you. So the people that he's going to be appearing to and the glory, his glory to be upon are different than the other people. So there's a division between some people and then some other people called you in this verse. Here, Isaiah repeats himself from the first verse. When words are repeated this way, Yahweh is putting emphasis on them. So again, Yahweh Yeshua Elohim will zarak, he will arise or appear through the gross darkness on something called thee in the King James, or you in the modern vernacular. Who is you? His people. This is a reference to that there's people outside of the wilderness where his bride will be being prepared, and upon those people who are in the wilderness of the people, there will become light there. We will have light when the rest of the earth has none. So Yahweh will zarak, arise on us, and so the you referred to in verse 2 is us, his people who are in the wilderness. The other people are those who are outside the wilderness. And we will see his glory, his kavod. So now we see that there are other people involved in Isaiah chapter 60. In verse 3, it says, and the Gentiles, that's those other people, shall come to your light, and the kings to the brightness of your rising. Again, Yahweh is speaking to Zion, the people called Zion, and Jerusalem called Zion. And so obviously the people that were in the wilderness that he arose upon will now be in Jerusalem, Zion, and the Gentiles will come to Zion, to the Israelite people. So why will the Gentiles come to Zion? Because we, the Zion people, will be waiting for them in Zion, Jerusalem, to serve and teach them. And we will be, and I say we, Jerusalem and Jerusalem's people, which is going to be us, will be the only source of light on the earth. Because remember, there's darkness and thick, gloomy darkness all over the rest of the earth when this happens, according to Isaiah 60. So in verse 4, it says, lift up your eyes round about. So he's telling his people that are in Jerusalem, lift up your eyes and look around and see all they gather themselves together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from afar, and your daughters shall be nursed at your side. So the Gentiles will gather themselves together and come to you, or shall I say us. Hopefully everybody in this room will be there. I'm particularly pointing to myself to make sure I always learn to keep qualifying. So they come to you, that's Zion the city and Zion the people. Your sons and daughters is a promise about the people's, Zion's children, and that's the people's children and Jerusalem's children, who did not understand until the light shone forth from Zion the city and Zion the people. Isaiah 60 verse 5 says, and you shall see and flow together, and your heart shall fear and be enlarged, because the abundance of the sea shall be converted to you. The forces of the Gentiles shall come to you. So your heart shall fear. Pakad, Strong's 64:32, stand in awe. Pakad, stand in awe. And be enlarged. Rakad, your heart will open wide. That's what Rakad means, Strong's 73:37. So our heart will look in awe at what's coming, how the Lord is bringing our children to us. We will look out and see that, and our hearts will also open wide to receive them, and they will be converted. That word is havak, not teshub. They will be converted, Strong's 20:15, meaning to turn about or turn over. But these are people who have been going the wrong way from Jerusalem. Now they're turning about. They're coming back this way toward Jerusalem. That is the definition of the end gathering. Yahweh has scattered his people. They went out, and now they're turning about. Havak. Hallelujah. The abundance of the sea is a reference to Gentiles, which are symbolically a reference to the sea, or the sea is a reference to Gentile people. Israelites are from the land, Haaretz. These Gentiles shall be converted to Jerusalem, to Zion, to Temple Mount, and to the other people. In other words, they will be joining us. These people will be from those who somehow survived to be the 750 million people who will be left from the 7.5 billion who have died in the tribulation. Of course, that population is higher now than 7.5 billion on the earth, but you get the idea. 90% of the world's population is going to die, but 750 million will be left. And of course, not every Gentile will come. It will be the sons and daughters of Zion who did not get out of religion before the tribulation. They did not flee with the Revelation 12:6 woman halfway through the tribulation. And they will realize their great mistake and will come to, turn back to Zion, the people in Zion, Jerusalem. They will join the reestablished Israelites from all 12 tribes in Jerusalem and will repent of their sins and become Israelites instead of Gentiles. And these people are the great multitude spoken of in Revelation 7:9. After this, I beheld, and lo, a great multitude, which no man could number, of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands. That does not take place in heaven. That takes place in Jerusalem. Once the king is over there and he's been already crowned, and he has led us, as you're going to here in just a minute, he's led us through this path that you see on your screen. Now he's over there, and they're coming back to him because he is the land. So that happens in Jerusalem. Isaiah 60, verse 6. The multitude, and by the way, that with palms in their hands, that happens at Sukkot. This is all going to happen between Tishri 1 and Tishri 15. See, you got Yom Teruah, and then 10 days later, you have Yom Kippur, and 5 days after that, you have the start of Sukkot. By Sukkot, these people, by the time he gets here on Tishri 1, and he's crowned, and he leads his people and brings them all through this route and everything, two weeks, and these people get there. This is all going to happen quick. They're going to be there for Sukkot. Our children, I have said to my sons that I would love for them to be in Jerusalem for Sukkot. Well, we're locked out now, so the only time that they're going to be able to come is if they survive to the end of the tribulation, or if they flee with the woman in Revelation 12:6, halfway through the tribulation. Isaiah 60, verse 6, the multitude of camels, I love this verse, shall cover you. The dromedaries of Midian and Ephah, all they from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and incense. Oh, just like the Magi who came, they brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Frankincense is one of the incenses that it was used in the temple. And they shall show forth the praises of Yahweh. Now, I want to talk about those camels, because camels are gamel in Hebrew. And the dromedaries, though, are Becker in Hebrew. Strong's 1070. Strong's says this is in the sense of young camels. However, this word is only used one time in Scripture, in this verse, and no one really knows what it means. Its root word is Becker, which is 1069, which it only has three uses in Scripture. The first use is Leviticus 27:26, which says Becker is Yahweh's firstling. So Becker, in that Scripture is the firstlings of man. So this word always makes me think of Isaiah having a vision of cars coming to Jerusalem. You know, because they have a hump like a camel and are smaller than a camel. So they're like a camel's firstling. And, you know, Isaiah just didn't know what he was seeing. So he put a spin on the Hebrew word Becker, firstling, for Yahweh's firstlings, to show that the Gentiles are Yahweh's firstlings coming from the darkened earth toward the light of Zion and on camels and in cars. I had a teaching. Coming to Jerusalem in camels and cars. And I always thought that was funny. Now, do I know whether that's really what that is or not? No. But that's stuck in my brain for 6 or 7 years now. So I'm stuck with it until Yahweh shows me anything different. Isaiah 60, verse 7 says, all the flocks of Kedar shall be gathered together to you. The rams of Nebaoth shall minister to you. To who? Yahweh's people, Zion, they shall come up with acceptance on my altar. So they're serving Jerusalem now, and I will glorify the house of my glory. Well, Kedar and Nebaoth are the two oldest sons of Ishmael. They will care for Yahweh's people in the wilderness of the people. Nebaoth, though, is a particular note. That is the Hebrew for the name Nabataean in Greek, and it is these people that built Petra, a place where Yahweh's people will be ministered to during the second half of the tribulation for 3.5 years. Isaiah 6:8. Who are these that fly as a cloud and as the doves to their windows? They will come on camels. Some people in southern Jordan still use camels for transportation, in cars, small camels, and in ships and possibly airplanes. And I don't know if flying airplanes will be possible at that time, but they certainly can fly in the dark. Airplanes can. It just depends on what is causing the darkness. So if there is volcanic and nuclear bomb debris in the air, the airplanes won't be able to fly. But they fly as a cloud, and doves to their windows are both ancient Israelite idioms, meaning they come quickly, not that they are up in the air being transported. In ancient Israel, when ships, you know, as they had white sails, and, you know, you could look out in ancient Israel off of the seacoast and see if there were a lot of ships coming on the horizon. It was said that those white sails looked like clouds coming. Now, if you were expecting war, that was a bad thing. But if you were expecting provisions, that was a good thing. And for us, them coming in those ships as a cloud across the ocean to us, that's going to be a wonderful thing. And then now here, oh, I want to go as the doves to their windows. I didn't put this note in here, but doves to their windows. These doves are homing pigeons, because you send a homing pigeon out. It takes its message where it's supposed to go, and it always returns back. This is a reference back to in Isaiah where it says he's going to rakab them. He's going to turn them around. They're returning as homing pigeons because this is where they belong, in Israel, in Jerusalem, with those of us who are their parents and those that belong in Jerusalem with us. Isaiah 6:9, surely the isles shall wait for me, and the ships of Tarshish first, to bring your sons from afar, their silver and gold with them, to the name of Yahweh, your God, and to the Holy One of Israel, because he has glorified you, Zion, Jerusalem, and you, his bride. So this is a reference to ships bringing the people. Now, this brings me back to Bashan, because after having gone through all this, I still need to explain, why will people find themselves in Bashan? That's inside enemy territory, as I said before. Well, they will run there to escape the king of the north. As he sweeps south through Israel and Jordan, some people from Judea, when everybody flees Judea, that's just being attacked, some will actually run northward up those mountains of the West Bank and up into Golan. Those will be mostly Jews and Christians, and they will run up there at the halfway mark of the seven-year tribulation. Now, why do I say they will go up into Golan? Because Golan was part of the territory of Bashan, which is why today Syria and Israel are still fighting over Golan. Golan belonged to Og until Israel captured it. So you know what, really, today's fight over Golan is really, it goes back 3,500 years, when we have in the book of Judges, and again in 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel, and later on in fact, Jeremiah 49, this constant conflict between who owned this area of Bashan. Golan is part of that Bashan territory that belonged to King Og in this week's Torah portion. And Joshua took that and gave it to Manasseh. Of course, Gilead is also up there, and it's one of the safe places as well. But that's why it mentions Golan. And by the way, Golan was a city of refuge in Deuteronomy 4:43. So we learn more about Bashan from Deuteronomy 31, verses starting at 30 to 32:43 in the prophetic song of Moses that he sung to Israel so they could learn it and understand their future in the end of age. That is found in Deuteronomy 32:14. I'm not going to read the whole part of it, but verse 9 says, for Yahweh's portion is his people, Jacob is the lot of his inheritance. He, Yahweh, found him, Jacob, in a desert land, This is a prophecy about the end times. And in the waste howling wilderness, he, Yahweh, led him about. He, Yahweh, instructed him. He, Yahweh, kept him as the apple of his eye. As an eagle stirs up her nest, flutters over her young, spreads abroad her wings, takes them, bears them on her wings. So Yahweh alone did lead him, Jacob. And there was no strange God with him, with Jacob. He, Yahweh, made him, Jacob, to ride on the high places of the earth, that he, Jacob, might eat the increase of the fields. And he, Yahweh, made him, Jacob, to suck honey out of the rock and oil out of the flinty rock, butter of kine and milk of sheep with fat of lambs and rams of the breed of Bashan, and goats with the fat of kidneys of wheat. And you did drink the pure blood of the grape. Now Yahweh, as we keep teaching, promises to repeat his patterns. Thus, his people will repeat life in the desert land and the waste howling wilderness, and some will get the wonderful provisions of Bashan, and they will show up as a safe place. Bashan shows up as a safe place in the end of days. But I want to stress that in Bashan, those people will be isolated and cut off from those people who have fled to southern Jordan. They will be safe because Yahweh says he will bring back his people from there, Psalm 68:22. But a consequence of getting cut off from the others by running north instead of running east, southeast, and then south, is that they will be, although safe inside Iran's Syrian ally territory, it is that they might not get to participate in Yeshua's triumphant entry into Jerusalem unless they come south before that happens and meet him in Moab. Now, Yeshua's route at the second coming begins in Egypt. If you look at your map, you'll see it start there. It says Cairo. Hosea 11:1 says, when Israel was a child, then I loved him and called my son out of Egypt. Yeshua will follow the same pattern as at his birth and as at when they came out of Egypt. And he will have his people with him, and they will be protected, as in the first Exodus, by pillars of cloud and fire, according to Jeremiah 4:13. Behold, he shall come up as clouds, and his chariots shall be as a whirlwind. His horses are swifter than eagles. Woe to us, for we are spoiled. Isaiah 19:1 says, the burden of Egypt. Behold, Yahweh rides upon a swift cloud and will come into Egypt. And the idols of Egypt shall be moved at his presence, and the heart of Egypt shall melt in the midst of it. And I will set the Egyptians against the Egyptians, and they shall fight every one against his brother and every one against his neighbor, city against city and kingdom against kingdom. There's going to be a big war between Yahweh's remnant, who understands who they are, and the other Egyptians who are against Yahweh's people. 1916, in that day, this is Isaiah 19:16. In that day shall Egypt be like a woman, and it shall be afraid and fear because of the shaking of the hand of Yahweh of hosts when he shakes over it. See, Yahweh calls Egypt, my people, Egypt. And he's got to go there first because that's where the first Exodus started. So he's going to repeat his exact same patterns. Isaiah 19:22. And Yahweh shall smite Egypt. He shall smite and heal it. And they shall return to Yahweh, and he shall be entreated of them and shall heal them. In that day, it's tribulation talk, shall there be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria. And the Assyrian shall come into Egypt, which is going to be one of the reasons why there's war because the king of the north has, guess who with him? The Assyrians. And so those people are going to be down in Egypt. The Assyrian will come into Egypt and the Egyptian into Assyria. They're going to run back and forth up and down this route, and the Egyptians will serve with the Assyrians. When it, you know, Daniel 11:40-45 talks about how the all of that territory, including Egypt, will be at his behest, basically. So when he gets down there, he makes all of these Egyptians his soldiers, and there opens up a trade route between Egypt and the coalition forces going up into Syria. And Yahweh's people, his remnant, are going to be stuck there. And there's going to be constant fighting, and people are going to lose their lives. Some of his remnant will lose their lives, but they'll be resurrected. Verse 24, in that shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Syria, even a blessing in the midst of the land. So even though they're going to be about a third of the population of Egypt and Assyria, and they're going to be a blessing in the midst of those lands, whom Yahweh of hosts shall bless, saying, blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, my inheritance. So, as I've been saying, there have been Israelites in Egypt from ancient times. So he will lead his people from Egypt when he comes in the clouds. He's going to lead them like the first time with the clouds across the land, not through the air. He will lead his people from Egypt on the same path as at the first Exodus. And Yahweh's people are still in the midst of the Assyrians today. And as I said, they will use the king's highway. And this king's highway can serve as a way for those who are in Bashan and Gilead in behind the border of Syria now to come south into Moab once Yeshua gets here. And somehow I think they're going to know that he's coming. And they're going to struggle to get down there because northern Jordan is going to be Iranian-occupied territory. So it's going to be tough for them. But I think they're going to try to get there. If not, then they will come after he is in Jerusalem. Habakkuk 3:3 says, God came from Timon, that's here in southern Jordan, and the Holy One from Mount Paran, that's here in southern Jordan. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth is full of his praise. His brightness was as the light. He had coming out of his hand, and there was the hiding of his power. Before him went the pestilence, and burning coals went forth at his feet. He stood and measured the earth. He beheld and drove asunder the nations, and the everlasting mountains were scattered. The perpetual hills did bow. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Kishon in affliction, and the curtains of the land of Midian, here in southern Jordan, did tremble. Timon, Mount Paran, and Midian are all in the south of Jordan. Now, Timon was the southernmost city in ancient Edom, southern Jordan. And, of course, Basra was the capital of Edom. But here is another reference about Yeshua coming to southern Jordan, to Edom. Jeremiah 49:19. Behold, he shall come up like a lion from the swelling of Jordan against the habitation of the strong. But I will suddenly make him run away from her, who is a chosen man, that I might appoint over her. For who is like me? Who will appoint me the time? And who is that shepherd that will stand before me? Those are all descriptions of her, his woman, and the one to whom she belongs. That word swelling in Hebrew is ga'on, and it means majesty, referring to a nation that has a king. Also, from the majesty may not be a good translation. It can be rendered as above, after, among, at because of or by reason of the majesty. Okay, so if you say in Jeremiah 49:19, behold, he shall come up like a lion by reason of his majesty of Jordan against the habitation of the strong. So it's talking about Yeshua the king there. Nebuchadnezzar actually did a near fulfillment of this chapter, Jeremiah 49:19. But this is going to have a far fulfillment repeated again when Yeshua comes up from Egypt in the end of days. And Yeshua will come roaring into Jordan like a lion, and he will remove the Iranian occupying government, the government of the Iranians, of the king of the north, will not stand against him. Because, you know, the king of the north will be occupying Amman, the capital, and the chief of the children of Amman, which today is still here. But in that day, they will have escaped. And that the king of the north will, of course, scoot on over to Saudi Arabia to try to take Mecca and Medina from Saudi Arabia. So the organized government at that time, which will be the king of the north, the Iranian occupying forces, not the current Jordanian government, is what Yeshua is coming to overthrow in Jordan as he roars into Jordan like a lion. Now, here is another reference to Yeshua's return route, Jeremiah 49:20. Hear, therefore, the counsel of Yahweh that he has taken against Edom and his purposes, that he has proposed against the inhabitants of Teman, southern Jordan. Surely the least of the flock shall draw them out. Surely he shall make their habitations desolate with them. So Yeshua's path through Teman is mentioned again here too. And again, this prophecy had a near fulfillment to Jeremiah's time when Nebuchadnezzar's army invaded and conquered all of Edom when Nebuchadnezzar captured Israel. However, Edom was not completely destroyed at that time. The Edomites rose again only to finally be defeated by Judah's army, which was commanded by John Hyrcanus in 135 BC. Jeremiah 49:21. The earth is moved at the noise of their fall, at the cry. The noise thereof was heard in the Red Sea. We're going to have a Red Sea experience for the people coming out of Egypt. And so Yeshua is going to be now in southern Jordan. And I'm sure that those Iranian troops are going to want to fight with Yeshua. And those Iranian troops are full of Edomites. I don't have time to go into all of that, but I just want you all to know that Ishmael, not Esau, Ishmael has a place in the kingdom separate from Israel, and Paran is Ishmael's territory. Now, Yeshua is not going to destroy the Ishmaelites, but he will destroy the Edomites. The Edomites do still have even a remnant here. Like I said, John Hyrcanus conquered and forcibly converted the Edomites to Judaism in 135 BC, which effectively desolated their territory. But even though they did that to the captured males after that war, the Edomite women and children that survived the war still remain, possibly, and possibly their descendants are here, and those will need to be destroyed. And so, you know, we have to let Yeshua, Yahweh Elohim, do that, because only he knows who are the right people who are Edomites. We don't know that. The Edomites will be completely destroyed, those who reject Yeshua, those Edomites who convert to his kingdom by faith in him, after which they're no more Edomites, they're Israelites, will be coming along as well. But before the Edomites who are mixed in with the Ishmaelites because of Esau's marriage to an Ishmaelite wife get destroyed, they will do what they refused to do for the Israelites in the first Exodus, which is provide water and food, according to Numbers 20, verses 14 to 21. And the Ishmaelites, who will not have to be forced to do that, will not be destroyed, and they will come up with approval on Yahweh's altar, as it says in Isaiah 60. Yahweh's next stop will be further north at Bozrah, Jeremiah 49:22. Behold, he shall come up and fly as the eagle and spread his wings over Bozrah. And at that day shall the heart of the mighty men of Edom be as the heart of a woman in her pangs. Notice this tribulation verbiage. Edom and Bozrah are mentioned together for Yeshua's return. Isaiah 63:1. Who is this that comes from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah? This that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength. I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save. I want to look at that word dyed, D-Y-E-D. That word is comet. Now we know what comets is. It's leavening as opposed to matzah, unleavened. So he is coming with leavened garments. And there's a special way that this word fits in here because it can be translated a different way. But let's go back to Exodus 12:39. And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they brought forth out of Egypt, for it was lo chametz, not leavened, because they were thrust out of Egypt and could not tarry. Chametz was associated that first time in that first Exodus with some kind of violent thrusting out of Egypt. That's the same sense of Yeshua being at Bozrah, with his clothing blood-stained red after he finishes destroying the Iranians and the Edomites, and he takes care of all of that. But one of the translation words that can be used with comets is cruel. It's associated with that which is harsh or cruel in Psalm 71:4, which says, deliver me from the chametz man, the cruel man. So it may be that even though Yeshua's sheep are kept safe and fed, that their shepherds will in some way be cruel to them. Psalm 73:21 also uses the word chametz as grief. Isaiah 63:2, that wherefore are you red in your apparel and your garments like him that treads in the wine fat? He answers, I have trodden the winepress alone, and of the people there was none with me. For I will tread them in my anger and trample them in my fury, and their blood will be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment. So that's how his garments get chametzed or dyed red at Bozrah. For the day of vengeance is in my heart, and the year of my redeemed is come. So the Edomites were conquered by Nebuchadnezzar and then again by the Jews in 135 BC, but they still remain today, though they no longer are a nation in southern Jordan. And when Yeshua gets done with them, there will be no possibility of there being any Edomite left on earth. And as I've said, Iran is an Edomite haven. But when Iran comes down in here, and there are any of those Edomites that come down here when Yeshua comes, and they try to come after us, he's going to go out by himself. He's not even going to need us. Oh, that's like when he took care of Pharaoh all by himself with that pillar of cloud. That's why he stands alone. Amos 1:11. Thus says Yahweh, for three transgressions of Edom and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because he did pursue his brother with the sword and did cast off all pity, and his anger did tear away perpetually, and he kept his wrath forever. But I will send a fire upon Teman, which shall devour the palaces of Bozra. And there, here's another passage which describes the slaughter of the armies at Bozra in Edom. Isaiah 34:1. Come near, you nations, to hear and hearken, you people. Let the earth hear and all that is therein, the world and all things that come forth of it. So this chapter has to do with Yahweh's end time judging of the nations. Verse 2. For the indignation of Yahweh is upon all nations, and his fury upon all their armies. He will utterly destroy them. He has delivered them to the slaughter. And in verse 5, he says, for my sword shall be bathed in heaven. Before Yeshua ever gets out of heaven, his sword is already metaphorically bloody. He's coming to destroy. And behold, it shall come down, the sword. The sword shall come down upon Edom and upon the people of my curse to judgment. Isaiah 34:6. The sword of Yahweh is filled with blood. It is made fat with fatness and with the blood of lambs and goats, with the fat of the kidneys of rams. For Yahweh has a sacrifice in Bozra and a great slaughter in the land of Edom. This great slaughter has to do with unrepentant Edomites who, although they never had a nation or capital here again, are still here among the population. And we, again, don't know who these are, but Yahweh knows, and he must fulfill his Obadiah prophecy and other promises to completely wipe out all Edomites. Isaiah 34:7. And the unicorns shall come down with them, and the bullocks with the bulls, and their land shall be soaked with blood, and their dust made fat with fatness. All this happens before he even gets to Armageddon. Micah tells us that his people will be in a sheepfold in Bozra, in Edom, from where he will rescue them. Micah 2:12. I will surely assemble, O Jacob, all of you at Bozra. He's going to assemble everybody at Bozra. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together as the sheep of Bozra, as the flock in the midst of their fold. They shall make great noise by reason of the multitude of men. The breaker is come up before them. They have broken up and have passed through the gate and are gone out by it, and their king shall pass before them, and Yahweh on the head of them. So he's come from Cairo, see, down that red path across the Red Sea, comes up storming like a lion into southern Jordan through the territory of Edom. And notice that there are prophecies that say people will be safe in Petra. That is Ishmaelite territory. Teman and Bozra are Edomite territory. Petra was part of the Paran wilderness, where Ishmael also was kind of mixed in there with the Edomites. And then he goes north, and he's going to be on the head of them in Micah 2:3. Yahweh on the head of them means he will be leading his people as he gets them out of Egypt, followed by getting them out of Teman and other places in Edom, and then Bozra. Jeremiah 48:40. For thus says Yahweh, behold, he, Yahweh, shall fly as an eagle and shall spread his, Yahweh's, wings over Moab. Jeremiah 48:41. Keriot is taken and the strongholds are surprised, and the mighty men's hearts in Moab at that day, that during that tribulation, shall be as the heart of a woman in her pangs in tribulation. And Moab shall be destroyed from being a people because he has magnified himself against the Lord. That was fulfilled also with Nebuchadnezzar. But fear not, and the pit and the snare shall be upon you, O inhabitant of Moab, says Yahweh. He that flees from the fear shall fall into the pit, and he that gets up out of the pit shall be taken in the same snare. For I will bring it upon even Moab in the year of their visitation, says Yahweh. So they had a year of visitation. In that same chapter, four verses later, in verse 47, he says, "Yet will I bring again the captivity of Moab in the latter days, says Yahweh. Thus far is the judgment of Moab." In other words, this is where, you know, I'm going to bring them back in the latter days. I'm going to take care of the enemies that are there in the tribulation times, and this will end the judgment of Moab. So the Moabites in the end of days will recover their place as a nation over which Israel, Yeshua's kingdom Israel, will preside and govern them, as with all the nations of the earth, as a vassal to Yeshua, Yahweh, Elohim. Now, go down to the next map, Yaakov.
There's
the eagle. The eagle is a reference to Yahweh as the savior of his people. He was the eagle that brought them out of Egypt the first time in Exodus 19:4. You have seen what I did to the Egyptians, you know, with that cloud, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. And he will be our eagle the second time. The woman of Revelation 12:6 will flee from other parts that are not Egypt. Yet they will be brought across into the wilderness on two wings of an eagle, according to Revelation 12. This will happen 3.5 years before Yeshua returns to follow this route. And that eagle is now sitting as a landmark in the Dead Sea. So the wings of the Dead Sea eagle are the wilderness mountains of Jordan, through which the people will flee to get to the Edomite and Mount Paran, or wilderness of Paran desert areas. Further south, go down now to the next map. I'm going to show you, see where all that red is, and it says Petra. So Petra is south of that wings of an eagle. See, the thing is, when he bore them on eagle's wings, he didn't leave them in the eagle. When they come across this eagle, he doesn't leave them in the eagle. He takes them to the wilderness, to the desert. Exactly. Up there is not where you want to go live. But you're going to be down here where Petra is, where, you know, and south and maybe a little north, but around that general area on the east side of the Jordan River and to the south of the Dead Sea. So from Egypt, the eagle, Yahweh, did bear his people and will bear them again, traveling north through Sudden Jordan and through this, the wings of this eagle for some. And, you know, perhaps other people will come through the Aqaba port, and who knows how they're going to get there. When the people in Judea flee, they will be born on this eagle prepared by Yahweh in the wilderness, where they will travel south to one of the sheepfolds. It's probably Bozrah, as Yaakov pointed out to me, or has been saying to me a lot lately, where Yahweh will rescue them from their Edomite enemies, Iran, especially at Bozrah, the ancient capital of Edom. After Yeshua leads his people all the way from Egypt through southern Jordan, they will arrive at the same area of Moab from where Joshua crossed over the Jordan River, because Yeshua will lead them by the same route. The Jordan River will be split again, and we will walk over on dry ground into Israel, just as the children of Israel did the first time. Now, there will be more battles for Yeshua after this, but those are for another teaching. And that ends today's teaching.
This has been Kimberly Rogers Brown from TheMessianicMessage.com. Thank you for listening.